Hey, Bedros.
Hey Pat, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. Hey, thanks for taking the time out. I know you're on a launch process. I appreciate it.
No problem, man.
All right, so you ready to get this thing started?
Let's do it.
All right, well, we're already actively recording, so we can just cut out the beginning part of this. And let me just introduce you, and we'll get going.
Awesome.
Hey guys, this is Bedros Kulian, and on the phone with me right now is Pat Beath with Athletes Acceleration. Pat, how are you?
I'm great, Pedro. Thank you.
Hey man, listen, I got to tell you, it's been some time that I've known of you, and but your story is kind of in bits and pieces, and from everything that I can tell, and everything I've heard from guys like Chris McCombs and so on. You know, you've got an awesome transformation where you went from being a personal trainer to then, you know, niching yourself into working with athletes, speed clinics and such, and of course now in the information marketing industry. What can you just tell me what that whole transition was like?
Yeah, my story's kind of all over the place, and but I think it resonates with a lot of especially personal trainers out there. But first, I want to say, you know, I've been following your stuff for, I don't know, for a long time now, and I'm pretty excited to be on the call for the first time. So I'm excited, and I'll just kind of tell you a brief story about how I got all started.
Sure.
I started exercise physiology in college, so when I graduated there. They pretty much gear you towards a research job, or you know, if you want to go in the personal training route. So those are the only two options that you have coming out of college that I saw. And so I started going working as a personal trainer, and quickly became manager of you know one of the largest personal training departments in Boston. And at the same time, I was working with some athletes. I decided to intern with who I thought was one of the greatest strength conditioning coaches in the country, which, lucky enough, he was in the Boston area, so it worked out well. I was coaching high school track and field. So pretty much I was working, getting up at 4 in the morning and working till who knows when at night. And as a lot of personal trainers happen, you start to get burnt out because as much as you love your job, you can only do it for so long. And I kind of stumbled upon, like, I started working and leveraging my time a little bit better and started doing speed camps and other types of sports camps where I could get more athletes in and help more people and make a little bit more money. And I was lucky
Hey,
enough to, yeah, go.
let me ask you a question right there, because you just explained a little transformation there, but I want to get a kind of a timeline going here. So, when just give me a year. When did you start as working in that personal training department in Boston? What year?
I graduated in 2000, so I started right away, right when I graduated in the summer of 2000.
Okay, so the timeline starts at 2000, where you graduated, and you're now going into the personal training field in the largest personal training department in Boston.
Right.
So moving forward, I'm just curious, at what point did you figure out, gosh, I can leverage myself and start doing speed camps? How many years later?
About 4, when it actually like
Okay.
started coming together, where I figured, you know, I wanted to help more people. It wasn't about money at all, 'cause you know, I was interning, like I was doing all this other stuff where I could care less how much money I made. And it was really, how could I help more people? And then kind of you start changing a little mindset. So wait, you know, I can make more money doing the same thing and help more people at the same time. So it kind of made sense.
Sure. Okay, so moving forward there, so you're doing the speed camps and you're obviously reaching more people rather than just the whole one-on-one thing. What's next? What happens?
So I'm still working all these jobs, and someone I went to high school with, who he also ran Division I track and field, so he was coaching track and field in the local area as I was, and we decided just to you know, combine it and work camps together, and decided to start our you know we wanted to put a company together, and kind of do our own thing. I was lucky enough, his mother actually, I'm not sure if you remember Corey Rudel, you probably do,
Yeah,
like.
I
Go
sure do.
far back. So he was putting on a conference in Boston, him and Jermaine Griggs. And my business partner now, Latif, his mother bought us tickets to it. It was like how to market online. We said, you
Oh,
know, we
that's
don't
so
really like,
cool.
yeah. But we had no idea. Like, we don't want to go to this thing. We kind of have to. She bought us tickets. You know, I guess we'll go this weekend to check it out since it was local. If it was anywhere else, we wouldn't have gone.
Right.
So we go there, and, you know, Jermaine Griggs is definitely very motivational. He does, like, how to play keyboard by ear, and he was, like, 18 at the time, and he was just killing it. So maybe there is something to this whole marketing thing. Figured, you know, we created a product that summer in 2004 more to give away, you know, give to parents and athletes that we couldn't work with.
Yep.
You know, people were coming to us, and we didn't have time to work with more people. So we said, we'll just put this product together of our system and, you know, kind of give it away to people that we can't work with because we felt bad. So after we go into this conference, this seminar, we figured that, you know, we'll try this online thing, you know, continue to do camps and pretty much give it a try. So in January 1st of 2005, I quit all my other jobs and we started our company and put our website up.
Now, is that Athletes Acceleration?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Now, moving forward from there, I'm real curious about the story here because now you've left the offline world, and I've got this theory about the offline world, and you're talking to a guy who worked in the trenches, worked the early morning hours, closed down the gym at 11 p.m. at night. It's funny, when I went from offline to online, it was almost like taking your car from, you know, driving on dirt roads, deciding to go from New York to California on dirt roads, and then all of a sudden realizing there's a super interstate where you can go, you know, the Autobahn, where you can go as fast as you want so long as you don't crash. That was my epiphany. So I'm curious, when you went online from 2005 moving forward, what happened next?
All right, so I quit my job and, you know, really didn't save up for it. I just figured, you know, it's going to be successful. No doubt in my mind, it's pretty much, instead of like ready, aim, fire, I'm ready, fire, you know, then aim later. So I just like went after. I said, you know, when I work, you know, I don't want to be outworked by anyone. So when it's time to hustle, that's what I'm doing. So I figured, you know, I'm going to kill it. Everyone, the internet's huge. You can make so much money on there. You can reach so many people. Put up a website, which, you know, I can pretty much check my email and you know, search. I was going to say Google, but it was Yahoo at the time, who was the big name. And that's pretty much all I could do. So I had really no idea how to put up a website, do any of this at the time. So I paid someone from Sweden like $200 or something like that to put up our website. And I figured just we'd make a ton of money. In that month, January, we grossed $1,200 online.
Right.
So kind of it's a little scary to just kind of jump into it and that's all you're making. But just trying to figure out the process and the systems and really how to do it. You know, within our first 6 months, we started making $20,000 a month and then obviously grew from there.
Okay, so 6 months into 2005, the first month it was $1,200. You know, by 6 month point, you're doing $20,000 a month.
Yeah, it went from like 12 to like 1,400 to like 4,000. Then I think it was like 12,000. Then we hit 20 and I said, all right, now we know what we're doing and we have the, you know, obviously we didn't know that much, but we figured out what was working, what wasn't, and just started making improvements from there.
Now, Pat, let me ask you a question because this is really interesting, and I know you, a lot of trainers will ask you this question too, is what was the product, number one, and how long did it take you to create the product that started, or products that started driving in, you know, $20,000 a month?
The only product that we had at the time and the first product that we created was called Complete Speed Training, which we still sell now. It's still like the best speed training product out on the market because it encompasses every area. So it's like 5 DVDs. We pretty much put our whole system on DVD. So the system that we were using to train our athletes to how to get faster, and we covered like power training, strength training, core, conditioning, acceleration, max velocity, speed endurance, all that good stuff and more. So we put that out there.
5 DVDs.
5 DVDs and a manual. That's what we came up with when we started. And it took us, like, we filmed it ourselves. We did Latif did the editing, which he had no idea how to do that. It took probably a couple months from start to finish. A lot longer, we figured we'd get it done in a week. That didn't really happen. And, you know, at the time, we were doing the copying, the burning of the DVDs ourselves. We'd be going to the mail, you know, we're showing up with the packages for each order ourselves. So we did everything in-house until we could start afford to start outsourcing. So you don't need tons of money to get started. We did everything ourselves. I was, like, creating the labels for the DVDs at the beginning.
That is awesome. So obviously at some point you realize, oh, my gosh, you know, I've got a market cornered, which still, if I'm not mistaken, your niche is the speed endurance athletes. Is that right?
Well, speed and power athletes. So we gear more towards, like, you know, the sprinters, the football players. So those type of athletes, which we didn't do any market research. We had no idea. If you look at the speed training market now, there are a couple of people that are doing fairly well. We think we have it fairly cornered. We can definitely expand it out. But doing market research, I don't know if I would have got into this niche. I just did what I love to do, and it kind of grew from there. And, you know, maybe it was dumb because it's a general niche, so we can't talk to a specific athlete, you know, just a track and field guy, just a football guy. Just, you know, we're talking in general terms, which hurts a little bit in our marketing. But, you know, it's kind of the position we put ourselves in.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question based on that, because you kind of led right into the question I was going to ask is, and you answered it. In the beginning, you did no market research. It was one of those things where, you know, I like doing this. I'm passionate for this. This is what I kind of wake up for in the mornings. And you dove into it. But if the Pat today can go back, you know, to 2004, 2003, what kind of market research would you do? Or what kind of positioning would you do in a niche? What would you do different?
What would I do different? That's a good question. Well, what we were passionate about, like, we both coach track and field, and, you know, we work with athletes up, you know, in football specific. So those were our two major markets. So to do differently, we would have created a specific track and field product. So now we can cover more. You know, we can throw block work in and that sort of thing and talk about the individual races. And football, we would have talked about more, you know, how to run a fastest 40 type of thing and throw a lot more agility work in. So if we would separate it, we would have separated it that way instead of just kind of be general with the whole, just like overall speed training.
Gotcha. Okay, that's really good advice. And the reason I asked that loaded question was, and I know you hear this a lot of times from trainers or anybody looking to go into the information marketing industry, is their product or idea is too general. It might be a product for women or a product for men. And they think, well, that's my niche, but that's still way too general. And I wanted to hear from you, a guy who's successful now, and you just said that, you know, well, we kind of painted ourselves into a corner where this is our market. And it's interesting that had you had to do it over again, you would have picked a tighter niche. But moving forward,
well,
obviously, that's... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you can't kind of expand your market. Say, like, if I had a football product, I can do all different things for football. You can get into skills or maybe bring on another coach that's doing the skills portion of it, and I can branch out from there. So it's easy to leverage the products that you have, the more focused or the more niche that you are. So it just makes your life a lot easier. And from a marketing standpoint, if someone's coming to my sales copy on my website, I can speak directly to that track and field sprinter instead of just kind of speaking globally and not using specific terms. So I'm just making my life harder by being more general.
Exactly. Hey, you know, I'm kind of curious, and I appreciate your candidness here. So let's dive into now the actual logistics of what you do, of being an information marketer, because that's exactly what you do these days, correct?
Right.
Well, my question is, I'm Joe Athlete or Joe Coach, and I log on, I search on Google, and I log on, and I see your website. Now, I'm looking at your website right now, and I see a lot of products. What percentage of your products are hard products, physical products, and what percentage are virtual downloadable products?
I would say 90% are physical. And that was just a choice we made at the time. I love digital products. We just released one a couple months ago, and it's doing real well, and I love not having the cost of production costs being taken out every month. So, and it's a higher-end product. It's a $300 product, so, you know, not high-end in, you know, how to make money market, but it's a high end in sports information market on, or, you know, training type of market. And it's a digital product.
Sorry. All right. That's really amazing, because I gotta reiterate what you just said. A lot of people have the misconception that if it's a digital product, well, then the perceived value has got to be lower. But obviously, one, because you're in a niche, you can charge more for a product. In other words, if I just did how to market or how to sell and put out a book in Barnes & Noble, it would probably sell for $10. But I've got a how to market and how to sell for personal trainers, and we're selling dozens a day because it's for such a niche market. Now, that's not necessarily a downloadable product, but I've got downloadable products that are just as expensive. And so you're saying right now 90% of your products are physical hard products, which actually I'm in the same boat. Are you switching over to more digital products?
Not necessarily. We're going to do both. Like, we'll still create. Before, we wanted the perceived value to stay high, and most coaches, like, they're used to getting DVDs for their training information. Now, as that's changing a little bit more, as, you know, e-books are becoming available, but it's really people are paying for the information. If you have solid information, they'll pay any price for it. It depends on, like, obviously you can't go too high. You got to find out what the breakage model is going to be. But what people are paying $300 for, and which we haven't really marketed it, we just kind of threw it out, tried to tell a seminar, and it crushed it. So now we're trying to figure out other ways to you know, putting our whole marketing system into it. We just wanted to test it out, how it would sell. And it's videos on how to create programs, like program designs for track and field coaches working with sprinters. It's just program design information, which there's a big need for it. We over-delivered and provide like a ton of videos and all these bonuses in it, but it's still a high-end product where most track and field products are selling for $40, and those are physical products.
Now, I'm curious, how do you deliver this? Is it, in other words, password-protected site where once you make the purchase, they can go in and check out the videos? Is that what it is?
Yeah, to make it even better, instead of just giving, you know, here's a web page to download all your stuff, or even here's a password-protected web page, I created like a membership site. So it has a membership site feel to it. There's no discussion forum, but I just broke it up and, you know, really made it look pretty. So you log in, you have your login information, it's secure. It's a whole just members area, and there's, you know, different places for it. So it's really, it looks like a membership site, and they're getting their videos there. If I just created like one page, and even if it was password protected, and just say, here, download all this stuff right here, you know, it looks less valuable, if you will, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. It would look cheesy versus a professionally done, what looks like a membership site that they purchased, as opposed to just, here, download them and then save them to your computer. Your computer crashes, it's gone. They have the assurance knowing that this membership site is always there as my resource center, correct?
Yeah, they're paying for the information, but you also don't want it to look cheap, because then they just feel like it's cheap. Whether or not the information is good, you don't want them to come into the site right away and think that, you know, this looks cheap, what did I pay $300 for?
Exactly. So the packaging is very important, and I'm curious, are you using the whole A-member, one shopping cart, revolution theme system there from WordPress? Is that, or
yeah,
is it something like Membergate?
I have a Membergate site, but what I'm using for this, just because it's working with one shopping cart, is exactly what you said. You know, go through A-member, and it works with one shopping cart, and you can just throw up a WordPress type of a theme to it.
Yeah, and the reason I'm poking and prodding here is because the people who are going to listen to this audio program on information products and how you went from the slower offline world into the faster paced, faster growth potential, expansion potential of the online world is just that. One of my clients and I, Josh Carter, we created 100rep.com, which is an ebook product on the front end for $37 with a $19 upsell. On the back end, one of the bonuses of the product is a 30-day access to 100repworkout.com, which is a full-blown membership site with access to Josh and awesome videos and all these bonuses and you know, video shopping trips that he does at Costco and everywhere else, fast food restaurants that you can go to and get healthy stuff. And that's $19 a month, and you're automatically tied into that continuity program. And that's the system that we used, which was the WordPress blog. In fact, it was a revolution-themed WordPress blog with an A member to manage a membership and one shopping cart to manage a payment processing system. And we went from idea to implementation in 38 days. In fact, it launched January 5th. And the formula there, again, with selling and creating products online, in 38 days we went from ebook to bonus gifts to the back-end product versus to do something like that on the offline road. Way different. I just wanted to, again, bring that to the attention of the listeners here that you did something very similar. Now, I don't know, do you have a back end for this product, or is it just $300 and then boom, you have access?
You have access and that's it. We're weak on continuity. That's kind of like a flaw, but it's more, you know, we have some things in the works working with other people, but I guess it's more of a lifestyle choice, where I don't want to provide myself content every month and have to produce content every month. So I kind of stayed away from it. We tried some things, and we're going to be doing some things in the future. But definitely a weakness in our business model.
Is the continuity, is what you're saying?
The lack of continuity, right.
The lack of continuity. Yeah, I got to tell you, it's funny because a lot of guys I talk to, and I'm fortunate enough, and I hope Josh Carter never listens to this audio program because we're partners in that, but I kind of went the whole publisher, content provider angle.
The way to go.
And it, exactly. And then I'm the publisher. I'm the idea man. And in fact, to be quite honest with you, when I was a trainer, I would train clients who would show up late to my 30-minute sessions. You know, they had 15 minutes to go or eight minutes to go. And I'd say, we're going to knock out 100 repetitions of a body part or two, and you're out of here, Mr. Jones. And so, of course, I didn't want to put a product out there to compete with trainers. And so I said, hey, Josh, you know, let me show you this training system. Let me know what you think. He loved it, and it was literally over, you know, this past December. It was just the holiday times. I take the November and December off, and it was a harebrained idea, and I said, will you put your name on it and start creating content and get behind it? He said, absolutely, and that's how we did it. But the biggest flaw in continuity model is if you do a continuity model that's content-based, and in my opinion, here's why, and that's the 5% of the people who are going to use the content are always going to want it, and if you don't deliver, they're going to want to cancel or breathe down your neck. The other 95% who are members, while they like the content, while it's there, they're not action takers, so they might very well cancel. My solution for that has been to create continuity businesses that are service-based and not content-based. Great example is FitPro Newsletter. I don't know if you use or heard of FitPro Newsletter, my newsletter software.
Yep.
But it's basically a done-for-you software. Once you can literally sign up as a personal trainer, upload your picture, upload your links, upload some testimonials, and on the 1st and 15th of every month, we send out a fresh article, online newsletter to your clients and prospects and your entire list that you uploaded. And from there, we've got viral marketing things set up where your list will grow, lead generators to put on your website. So after that, you can literally die, and as long as your credit card is valid and it's not expired, we'll keep charging you month after month. And that, it's funny because I'm laying all my cards out here. The average porn site gets 3 to 4 months of stickiness. The average content site gets like something like 6 or 7 months. And we've got 19 months of stickiness on that product because
that's
it's service-based, and the trainer has to not lift a finger. On the flip side of things, one of my content things is high-tech trainer, the online training component. And every time a trainer wants to use it, they have to log in, create a workout, and send it. It takes effort. And the stickiness on that, they both have the same sign-up rate. We've got thousands of members on board. We get 2 to 3, 4 sign-ups a day. The difference is high-tech trainer stickiness is about 6, 7 months at best. And it goes to show you, like you said, you know, content versus service. And I figured out service is the way to go, and the manifesto is going to be all about service. And but, yeah, that's the fatal flaw in continuity that a lot of people don't talk about or don't realize until they get into it and realize they're held captive by it.
Yeah, that's why the publisher model is great, or like you said, like a software, something that's delivered to them that's push button, that it just shows up, and especially if they can make money by using this product or service, whoever just is coming to them and is being sent out to, say, their clients, or it's bringing more people in, they just are going to continue to use that forever. it's a good model to follow.
So I'm curious now. So here we are in 2009, and is it safe to assume you're a full-blown information marketer, right?
I am, yes.
I mean, you're not doing any side gigs offline. You're full-blown into this information marketing. You don't have to divulge the exact numbers, but I'm just curious. You know, the guy who was a trainer in 2000 and now it's 2009, less than a decade. Where is your income these days, or what's the difference between where you were and where you are?
It's enormous. You know, my first 2005, like having that $20,000 month was, you know, I was having a party that month. It was the greatest like time ever. And now, if I even come close to that, like I would cry because it's, you know, way too little, and I wouldn't know what to do. It's not like that because all the systems that are created in place, but it's a dramatic difference. Like I spent more money in education this past year. Actually, I don't even know what the final number is, but I spend well over $50,000 a year just on mastermind groups, seminars, products. So I spend more in education than I used to make as a trainer. It's just kind of crazy, like what you start to do, and how quickly your income can increase that way. And that number is, you know, I expect to at least make 10 times the amount that I spend on my education in my income. And if I don't, then I'm going to drop that piece. So same thing, like when you're providing value for your customers, you at least want to provide them with 10 times more than what they spend in value. And I expect the same thing when in my continuing education, that sort of thing.
Okay, so it's interesting. You look for that and you provide that. So when you create a product, you say, how can this provide at least 10 times the value of what they're paying? On the flip side, when you're buying education, or what I call when you're buying speed, because really the right education buys you years of speed that you would have otherwise had to earn on your own, you're looking for at least 10 times the value, or you're going to drop that source of knowledge.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's an awesome way. And a lot of people don't look at that. They go, well, I go to this mastermind, or I go to these events, and they're fun, and they're great, and I get to rub elbows with colleagues. But if they get nothing out of it, it's a great big pump up and nothing else, but continue to come without, they don't stop and quantify and say, this is what I'm looking for. So that's really cool that you're doing that. So one last question on the logistics, because, again, I want everybody listening to get their idea around that this is not a huge hurdle to do. So show me behind the scenes. I want you to pull the curtain back. And I'm not a personal trainer, but maybe a coach. I just bought a product off your site. What happens, the step-by-step? Who gets the order? Who does the shipping? How long, you know, what's the process to take place?
I just want to share one thing first. Like if you go to my home site, athleteacceleration.com, that's just like a compile of actual products. So it's almost like a shopping type of site. Now, my main products, I have individual sites that I do my direct marketing pieces to. So like my Complete Speed Training product, it's on CompleteSpeedTraining.com. So my other products are on different sites where I can actually drive some different traffic to and more targeted traffic to. So if you just go to that home site, it brings in traffic, it converts, but I spend a lot of time on marketing other sites around that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely does. In fact, I clicked on it and I see the sales copy there. So what you're doing, and in fact, since you opened up that can of worms, I'm going to ask what, in each of these, and that's a brilliant way to do it, by the way, the way that most big businesses attempt to do it, where they just have a little blurb of description of the product, that's never going to sell a product. So Athlete Acceleration is kind of like the hub, and of course, the person buying it and wanting to learn more about it is going to go into a full page direct response copy, correct?
Right, and actually we're going to be putting out soon, which the model has worked greatly, is using videos to show samples of the product, but also you giving like a real like hardcore view of that product. Say what you liked and even what you didn't like about the product. Be honest. Like when we've done that, it's killed it. So what we want to do is go around each of our products on that site, on athleteacceleration.com, and create videos for each of those products. So just something I think everyone should test, because it works a lot better, creates that bond of trust where you're being honest about the product, so when they actually get the product, they know what to expect, and like they'll come back to you because You know, you're speaking the truth. You know, I don't think you should say everything about that product is great and it's the most amazing product ever. You know, kind of give details of what you think honestly about the product. So just something that we're starting to do. And I kind of think people don't want to read as much copy anymore. So if you can kind of condense it, especially put it in a video format, it should work out better.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not answering your questions at all. I'm just ranting about other things.
No, you know what? Hey, get it off your chest, man. That's what this call is for. No, but seriously, that's a really good gem you just put out there, because a lot of the internet now, I mean, you look at StomperNet, and it's 99% video sales letters these days. It's hardly ever any copy. And when there is copy, it's after the fact for the people who they're trying to squeeze out a few more dollars out of the market. But it's all switching over to video and copy now. But I'm curious. Go ahead. Finish your train of thought. I don't want you to lose the thought.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if you're doing your marketing right, they don't need to email. Like, they don't need to read the sales copy anymore. They can look at the video and figure out what it's all about. And through other processes, depending on how you get that person there, to the actual sales copy, how you lead them there, they should be ready to buy that product without even looking at the sales copy. Maybe they'll check the price, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's a real good point, and I've heard that from a lot of people. They said, hey, after a while, I heard so much about it, and so saw so many blog posts and videos and whatnot about a particular product, that when I went to the sales copy, it was pretty much reading through some testimonials to just get further credibility and social proof, checked out the price, and then made my decision. And you hit the nail on the head.
I'm sure you go through the same thing where when you launch a new product, just because they already trust you, they know your information solid. So if you say, you know what, here's a new product I'm releasing, and you know it's going live at this time, I'm sure people will sign up in 4 seconds. It doesn't give them time to like even read anything. They're just signing up because they know the quality of information you already provide. So it just shows you that if you're doing your marketing right and providing quality content where people, you know like, and trust you, then they're going to buy whatever you put out.
Absolutely. Speaking of marketing, then, let me ask you, what are your top 3 marketing strategies, tactics to drive traffic, especially to condition them and then drive traffic, or maybe to drive traffic and then condition them to want to buy?
Are you using
any AdWords right now?
I do. I outsourced that for a while, and the person charged a lot of money for little results. So I wasn't happy. I tried a couple people. It didn't work out well. I'm doing it myself. I'm a lot happier. But I know I can, because it's part of your marketing. It's part of your message. What you're putting out there is what your ad is going to be. So it's kind of like when you write sales copy or put something on the page. You kind of want it to come from you. So I think it's a skill that you need to learn. You know, you need to learn how to write. It's extremely valuable to your business and the message that you put out there. So we do some pay-per-click stuff. Drive traffic like every way possible. Getting out, you know, on iTunes, putting, you know, audios on there, getting out to, like, just video and any place, like YouTube, Google Video, like all these, you know, I'm sure Traffic Geyser, your people know Traffic Geyser.
Yep.
Just like every way possible you can, like press releases, articles. What I suggest if you can do it is try to leverage as much as possible. So do a video of whatever, of, you know, for speed training. Say how to run a faster 40. Say if I did a video on that, I can rip the audio from that and use it in a different place. I can have it transcribed and use that as as an article and submit those to directories. I can use that on my blog. I can put it on my website. I can make a press release about it. So just try to, if you do something once, just try to leverage it as much as you can.
Yeah, I love that idea. And in fact, you mentioned Traffic Geyser. Another thing I use, and it's been real successful for me, is TubeMogul. I'm sure you've heard of TubeMogul. Yeah, and it's an awesome service. And if you're in a hurry, you just want to pump out a lot of content. And, in fact, TubeMogul was responsible for getting me, because I was just pumping it out through TubeMogul, because I didn't want to just go to YouTube and into Vidler and all these other sites. I was just pumping videos out through TubeMogul. And within 20, 25, 26 days, I pumped out 7 videos. And all of a sudden, I noticed on YouTube, I started owning, I own fitness marketing and personal trainer marketing, which are my top two keywords in my industry. And when you pop both of those into YouTube, the top two videos are mine, and then video number 5, 7, 12. And it's all through. Now, what I did was after using TubeMogul, then I would go into my YouTube account and then, you know, change the tags up of that video and the description to kind of optimize it.
Right.
But, man, I got to tell you, I was really impressed with TubeMogul. It's a free service out there that kind of kicks butt.
Yeah, it's even better than free.
Yeah, yeah. So this final question that I have for you there, and I know I kind of tapped on it and we moved on to something else, was what the entire logistics behind the scenes, what happens when someone puts in an order?
Someone puts in an order, there's going to be some sort of upsell there somewhere, and, you know, some sort of sale on the thank you page too, a one-time offer sort of thing. But when the order goes through, I use one shopping cart, has a lot of flaws, but, you know, it gets the job done, and I haven't really found anything better. So one shopping cart takes it, you know, it goes through my merchant account. The order goes to my warehouse, my distribution company. So I have my own products that the distribution company makes, and then I have other people's products that I sell, just because most trainers don't know how to sell their own products. So I sell more on my website for their products than they could on their own, just because they're not, you know, good at sales copy and that sort of thing. So I warehouse those products at my distribution company. So they get the email, they send it out, and that's pretty much it. Like, I don't have to worry about anything. If I have a virtual assistant that handles any phone calls or questions people may have about their order, if there is a return, it goes back to the company and they're refunded their money. So I don't deal with any of that, which is a huge change from 2005.
Okay, and that's the point I wanted to get to, is in 2005, you were putting the labels on the DVDs and all that, which in the beginning, we all kind of have to start. Although, my argument is, even a trainer or anyone starting information marketing right now does not have to go through that process anymore, because there's fulfillment companies that'll crank out, you know, 4 or 5 sales for you a month until your business takes off. So, you no longer house DVDs, press DVDs, CDs, do any of that. It's all done by the fulfillment company, and they get a copy of the receipt, and they fulfill the order, right?
Yeah, and yeah, we're billed 30 days later for whatever the cost of production and shipping and all that fun stuff is, and that's pretty much how it goes down. Don't be afraid by the cost of anything, because you can, like you said, there are print-on-demand type of companies where once you create the product, you send it to them. You know, until you start doing more volume, then you can negotiate your prices down from there. But it's so much better than having to burn everything yourself, edit everything yourself, put the labels on, make sure the DVDs actually work, show up to UPS with the packages and make sure they go out. And if there's a shipping problem, you have to manually do it. You know, that's just not fun. It's just a waste of time.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is it's – as you're describing all that, I started feeling anxiety, and I realized why. My very first info product, I did exactly that. I paid $2,300 to have a book and a set of 6 DVDs or CDs made, and it was one program together. It was a big red book and 6 CDs, and I had paid like $2,100 for like 400 copies, and I had them sitting in a room in my house, and you know, I was it, man. The order would come through, and my wife and I would print the labels and put it together. And every time I would look in that corner, I would see $2,000 or so sitting there. To me, it was just $2,000 cash sitting there because they couldn't move the product fast enough. And I kept thinking all the different things I could do with that money if it wasn't sitting there. You know, fast forward to where we are today, everything's done through distribution and fulfillment houses. We still ship out some stuff from the office, but that's because we get things made real cheap elsewhere, and then, you know, we pump out so much stuff that, and I've got the resources to do that now. But, man, it is amazing what these fulfillment houses and print-on-demand places can do to just relieve the stress of the onesie-twosie orders. That's a real good point that you brought up. Pat, I got to tell you, is there any other things that if a young, new, green trainer or otherwise, person asks you, hey, you know, what's the secret to information marketing? Any other gems that you want to give us before we end this conference call here?
I don't think there's any secret, really. And people that are trying to sell secrets really aren't showing you the truth. Like, I think if you have the passion to do what you love to do, that's going to carry over everything. I would say, like, passion and planned hustle. Not just hustling and going, like, sporadically, but planned hustle where you know what you're doing and you really want to work hard. It's really, if you accept that you're going to make it, it's kind of funny. In our industry, where there's a lot of coaches and trainers, that people are afraid to fail, which is crazy. Because as a coach, if I'm looking at my athlete and they failed at a competition or a game or something, I'm finding out what they did wrong so they're not going to fail again. And you have to do kind of, you have to put the same mentality towards your business as you would to the athletes that you're training. It's, if you fail, all right, that didn't work out. Like, how can we change that? You know, I'm a big Tony Robbins fan, and he always says, you know, all you have to do is say what you want to do, you know, be specific with whatever your goal is, take action, notice what's working and what's not working, and then change your approach to that. And it's easy as that, those four easy steps. Like, you can get creative and go in depth on how you're driving traffic, your sales process, because it can get complicated, but if you just do the basic things first and then learn as you go, I think that's my biggest belief is, you know, you kind of accept your own reality. If you decide that you're going to succeed, you're actually going to succeed.
Yeah. You know, I think it was Henry Ford that said, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're probably going to be right. And that to me sums it up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, especially like a lot of, if you're studying a lot of marketing stuff, I'm not a big fan of people that are marketers and in a ton of different niches. Like, that's great if they're providing a quality service and product, but I can't do that. I need to be doing something I'm passionate about and working in something that I actually want to get up in the morning doing. You know, I love my niche. I love my industry. So I want to stay in that. I'm not going to try to go outside of that and try to market in all these other different niches just because that's where the money's at, because I'd fail in it because I don't like it. So I feel like you have to just stay and do what you love to do. Whatever you want to get you excited about waking up in the morning, kind of stick with that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. Hey, let me ask you one more thing. What is this? You're working on a new project right now, and I got to tell you, I personally am pumped up about it just because of the business model and the opportunity that it presents. Can you tell us about it and you know, let people know how to get involved with it?
It's called Sports Camp Empire, and it's on sportscampempire.com. And what it is just how to make money, you know, if you want to, you know, how to be successful running camps and clinics and sports camps and clinics and or really boot camps or just working with groups. It's taking your time, you know, and leveraging your time and getting more athletes or more clients in that area. And we just cover like the offline marketing piece, the online marketing piece, and just really how to make a successful camp. It's all about leveraging your time. As coaches and trainers, a lot of coaches are also teachers. And when they have summers off, I see a lot of teachers that are painting houses, doing manual labor, are, you know, bartenders, waitresses. And that's what they do for the summer to try to make more money because they're not paid well for the rest of the year. So if you're already a coach, you already have the skills, use the skills and your passion and just make more money doing that.
That's awesome. Now, is it specifically for, you know, Sports Camp Empire, obviously. So what you give is like the step-by-step on how to create a sports camp that's successful?
Yeah, so I took myself and my business partner, Latif. We did like kind of like the online and, you know, the sales and the sales copy, the online marketing, that sort of thing. And then I got my friends and other coaches, Dwayne Carlisle, who's a strength coach of the San Francisco 49ers and who's run speed camps and sports camps since, you know, for like 15, 20 years. Brian Grosso, the president of the IYCA, who continues, just runs camps, you know, youth camps he's done it forever, and he does it all over the world. And Lee Taft, who's another speed expert out there that, you know, is in the field every day and just running camps and getting the job done and, you know, having these huge camps. So I got these people and just we shared our knowledge on like a webinar, online seminar type of format. So it's really, it's taking you and giving you all these ideas and showing you how you can make a more successful sports camp. And sports camp is pretty general. You can do it with boot camps or, you know, weight loss camps. A martial arts studio can use it. So, but, you know, any kind of groups can use that type of marketing.
Right. So the formula is the formula, and that's what you're really giving out. And it can be used literally in every group-oriented niche.
Yeah, you know, pretty much marketing is marketing. So if you figure out how to use it towards whatever you're trying to do, like there's going to be differences here and there. But if you're working with groups, it's really is a huge carryover for working with really any type of group.
That's awesome. Now, what was that website one more time?
It's sportscampempire.com.
Awesome.
And it's going to be released on Tuesday. So it's not really, it's not out right now, but it will be probably when this audio is out.
Yeah, by the time that this CD's out and hot, their hot little hands, that'll be out there. Well, that's awesome. Pat, I really appreciate you taking the time away from your launch process here to help us out and give us some insight about becoming an info marketer. And, man, you enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Bedros.
Take care. All right, Pat, that was awesome, dude. I appreciate it.
Nice. I feel like I didn't answer a lot of your questions. I kind of went off on a tangent a bunch of times.
You know what? Actually, there's a lot of wonderful gems in there. What I do is I take notes, and then on the printed newsletter that accompanies this CD, you know, it's literally like, hey, listen to what he says at, you know, 13 minutes and 20 seconds. Listen to this gem that he gives out at this time on the CD. So there's a lot of valuable things, takeaways from this, and it's going to be awesome. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
All right, Pat. Well, you have a great one, man. I again, thanks for taking the time out for doing this for me.